are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm delighted you're here. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I think you will be too. And I hope you make a habit out of it. Great habit to get into, and lots of folks around this planet have the habit. I hope you're the next one to get it. Last night, we talked about this, the Battle of Los Angeles. Now, this is an actual historical event, took place in 1942. And I read to you an article that had been sent to me. I got it in the afternoon, actually just before showtime, and made a decision, actually, to talk about something back up and take another run at that. I had planned a different topic for last night, but right at the last minute, because of the fact that we had this article that came in, I decided, okay, well, let's get it out there. Don't know if it's real. Don't know if it's bogus. And I made that very clear all the way through the show, stated it over and over and over. That report was written by someone named Sorcha Fall, and I can report to you today that that appears to be a flawed report. It isn't accurate. I had my doubts about it. I think you did too. And as I cautioned you, you know, I said, look, we don't know. And we will know in the next day or two. Information will surface. And information did begin surfacing. And apparently, the thing that flew through the skies and lit up and everyone saw it, it's being reported now that it was apparently part of the second stage of a Russian rocket, and this is the one that just made the Soyuz, it launched the Soyuz, the last one to go up to the International Space Station, the most recent one. And so apparently it was re-entering and burning up. I found it very interesting, though, that I got emails from people who, you know, it's interesting. When I get an email that is just absolutely red-hot angry and just scorching, they almost always say, I just listened to your show on such and such, whatever topic, or I just watched your show about whatever. And you said this, and you said that, and blah, 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 blah. And what's interesting about that is it's quite obvious they didn't listen to it. It's quite obvious they got maybe 5 minutes into it at the max. But I got two or three of those saying they can't believe that I was promoting all of this nonsense and so forth on that article last night. But now, you were here, and didn't I say, caution, we don't know if this is true. It may be bogus. Good chance. Oh, well, some folks prefer to have their head in the sand and their rear in the air, and when you do, it makes a good target for kicking. I'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're going to do things just a little bit different here this evening. We do have a guest. Jerry Wills is going to join us in a few minutes. But we have some other things we're going to cover before he joins us. And I hope that you will stick around, because Jerry is always an interesting and thoroughly riveting guest, I think. So he'll join us in just a few minutes. This Saturday, you know, once a month, I go into our chat room. And I wish I could do that more often, but honest to God, folks, I mean, really, I'm not kidding you when I tell you that my schedule is unbelievable. It's absolutely unbelievable. And when I tell you that I work 20 hours a day at this, that's not a joke. Ask anyone who knows me. Ask anyone who has been around me. I do 20 hours a day on this. And so it is, it's impossible for me to get into the chat room more often, but I love it. I love getting into the chat room and spending some time with you in our members area. So if you're a member, then this Saturday night is the first Saturday night of April, and I do this on the first Saturday night of the month. So I will be in the chat room on Saturday evening, okay? Now, let me announce it up front, and I'll put it in the K-Files e-zine. There is a possibility. I have received an email from someone who needs to meet with me. There is a possibility that may run a little bit late. If that happens, I'll do it on Sunday. So if you go there on Saturday and I'm not there, then on Sunday evening, I'll be there. All right? So it will happen this weekend, for sure. All right? Now, speaking of the members area, let me show you something, and let's put it on this camera over here, okay? I think you can see it better if... There you go. Can you see that? That is the official Kevin... Well, there we go. That's the official Kevin Smith Show mug. And what it says is the hottest talk show on earth, KevinSmithShow.com. It's that picture of me that you saw in the seminar, and you've seen it at other places where I'm standing in flames. Now, here's the deal. This week, we're running a special deal. Every person who joins our members area and who signs up for an annual subscription for this week, every person this week who signs up for an annual subscription will get free of charge. Let me see. There we got a good picture of it there. All right. I'm going to send you this as a thank you gift, a Kevin Smith Show official mug. And this mug, by the way, is going to become a collector's item, because it's going away. We're going to replace this with a new design. I'm not sure when that design is going to be ready, but a new design is coming out pretty soon, pretty shortly. So what we're going to do, if you sign up for the members area, you know, look, let's just be honest about this. A lot of you have been thinking about it. You've been saying, man, I'd like to. It comes out, if you pay, if you were to sign up on a monthly basis, it comes out to 23 cents a day. But when you sign up annually, you're getting a discount. Add it up, you'll see. You get a big discount. And so it's even less than that. And what we're going to do on top of that is send you, as a thank you for signing up annually, one of these mugs. All right? Now, let me tell you how this works. When you sign up, these mugs are not in a warehouse right here in the studio. Okay? These mugs will be made up. They'll be printed up as you subscribe. So when you subscribe, I order your mug, and it will be shipped to you from the company. So it won't even come here. It'll go straight from them to you. And so you should have it, you know, like within, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 days, whatever it takes for them to create the mug and ship it to you. So you've been thinking about it. Tonight is a good night to get on this, all right? Free coffee mug. All right, now, you know, last night we did talk about this article that was the source of it was allegedly coming out of Russia. This article that I hold in my hand is out of Russia for sure. And it is. It was printed by the Russian news service called RIA Novosti. Novosti, of course, in Russian means news. And written by Andrei Kislyakov. A lot of interesting information in this article. And the title is Time to Settle the Flying Saucers Question. Now, this is published by an official news agency in Russia. And one of the interesting things I found here, there they are in Russia, right? And you would think that in Russia they would not be having the same infestation of media idiocy that they have, that we have had here in the United States. They would have their own. What I found really interesting is the way this article starts. Now, and I'm not being angry or critical of the writer of this article, as you will see in just a moment. But this is interesting. It starts off this way. So do UFOs with little green men inside exist or not? You know, that story about flying saucers with little green men is some of the idiotic crap invented by the idiotic media here in the United States. No UFO investigator, no UFO researcher has ever asserted the existence of little green men. That was a creation of idiotic, mud-sucking media in the United States. But there it is, showing up in Russia. And, you know, I guess it's kind of like our Hollywood. You know, the worst stuff in our society seems to get exported. But anyway, the article is a good article. It just starts off with some of that mud-sucking, idiotic media stuff that we are bombarded with daily in this country. But then he goes on to sort of give a rundown of UFOs. And, I mean, just a real quick thumbnail sketch of UFOs. And it says, CNN supposedly filmed a UFO moving at a great speed from right to left during the inauguration of President Barack Obama. But those who watched the replay say it was a bird. I don't know. I saw it. I didn't pay much attention to it. I mean, if it's there, it's there. You know, if it's a bird, it's a bird. And then he goes on to talk about the fact that in both the Soviet Union and in the United States, both countries' defense departments meticulously registered reports of sightings back during the 1940s through the 1960s. And they not only meticulously registered those sightings, but then they were quite serious about investigating them. And he mentions Project Blue Book, which terminated in 1969. It said it had two goals: to determine if UFOs were a threat to national security and to scientifically analyze UFO-related data. Well, a lot of people have said that Project Blue Book did not engage in scientific investigation, that it was a whitewash. And it might have been, but it is also true that Project Blue Book, and listen carefully to what I'm saying here, Project Blue Book constitutes a document that it's an official U.S. document that says UFOs are real. Now, when I say that to people in person, a lot of times I see these puzzled looks on their faces like, are you kidding me? No, I'm not. Project Blue Book did engage in what I think in some cases was the art of ridiculousness taken to its highest possible degree in coming up with some, you know, really asinine explanations for some of these UFO sightings. But at the end of the day, the bottom line was there were bunches, I mean, I think it was about 1,200, of UFO sightings, the ones with the best documentation, best evidence, and they said, we can't explain these. Now, that's in their official documentation. And so there you have, as an official document published by the United States government, Project Blue Book, you have an admission that unidentified flying objects are real. That isn't what the mud-sucking, idiotic media focused on. They focused on the ones that Blue Book explained away. They didn't focus on the ones where they said, we can't explain this one. All right. Now, way over there in Russia, and by the way, for those of you in Russia who happen to be listening to me this evening, Dobrый день. Как дела? The U.S. Air Force, he says, concluded that UFOs are not a threat to national security. But way over there in Russia, this did not escape his notice. Listen. Paradoxically, the military still refused to provide information about UFOs for security reasons. Now, you know, we find that pretty interesting here in the United States, do we not? It's just really pretty interesting that they say that whatever these things are, first they say they don't exist, and then they say they pose no national security threat, and then refuse to release the information that they've gathered because of security reasons. As he said, that is rather paradoxical. Now, this article goes on to talk about some things. I've got 3 pages long here. It's a good article. And it talks about UFOs as related to Roswell and Area 51. And he notes that President George Bush moved Area 51's jurisdiction from Nevada to the Pentagon. Got a sip of coffee out of my official Kevin Smith Show mug here, which you can get, by the way. Lots of dust in the air here. Now, in Russia, he talks about what's going on in Russia. And He says that the defense ministry during the Academy of Sciences and the defense ministry during the years of the Soviet Union, both of them undertook investigations under the secret project names of Setka, Galactica, and Gorizant. And listen to this. It is even said that competent agencies, meaning the secret services, talking about in the Soviet Union, established contact with aliens and waited for their arrival to Earth. The media, again talking about in Russia, the media is now writing about a team of general staff officers and academicians. I can't say anything today. They're writing about these guys waiting for the arrival of a UFO in a desert back in June of 1991. So the media in Russia is actually reporting this. The media in Russia is talking about this. Now, I mean, all of that's interesting, isn't it? All of that's very interesting. However, what's really interesting to me is that a few months ago, such an article, I don't think, would have been published in Novosti in Russia. There was a meeting, apparently, in February the 12th, the last year, that took place, apparently, at the United Nations building. We heard about it. That meeting was a briefing for nations that were represented in the meeting. It was a briefing about the reality of extraterrestrials and putting together a plan, if you will, to begin to get the people of Earth acclimated to the idea that extraterrestrial intelligent life does exist and that they do visit Earth. Because apparently there is coming, according to the information from that meeting, apparently there is coming a big event sometime in the not-too-distant future in which there will be absolutely unambiguous revelation that these guys from the stars exist. In the next to the last paragraph here in his article, it says, but it is also apparent, well, clearly humans will always strive to search for beings of humanoid form in the universe. But it is also apparent that apart from tall tales about little green men, I want to tell you again, Mr. Andrei Kislyakov, that is from our own mud-sucking idiots in the media over here in the United States. Nobody in ufology talks about little green men. But he says, apart from the tall tales about little green men, there are also facts that logically point to the presence of alien intelligence on Earth. There it is in Novosti. When we come back, Jerry Wills will be with us. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is, he is with us, and it is none other than Jerry Wills. Jerry, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin.
You know, this is going to be a little bit different. We usually have, like, just kind of one thing that we're talking about, which is usually whatever your latest expedition has been. But I got several things I want to cover with you this evening. and including an update on your expeditions to the reported portal or Stargate or whatever it is in southern Arizona. I want us to talk about that. But before we get to that, I want us to talk about something else, and here it is. Folks, Jerry is the executive producer for Expeditions TV. And if you've ever gone over to channelu.com, and Jerry, is it channel-u or channel-u?
It's channel dash, then the letter U, then .com.
Yeah.
And right now, I'm broadcasting live my half of our conversation.
Oh, okay. Well, people can take a look at that. Now, here's the deal. If you ever go over there and look at some of the watch some of the videos that run, you will see some really, really excellent video production. I mean, it's just really good video. And Jerry is who produced the video that is being used to create the DVD of the seminar. And he talked to me yesterday and told me, gave me a little progress report, gave me another one today, and he was very enthusiastic about the quality of the video. So, Jerry, tell us about it.
Well, we shot the video in HD, 1080, 60, and it's a three-chip camera. It's a high-dollar Sony. And basically, we set this up so that we could capture, of course, the seminar, and it turned out fantastic. I was looking at the raw material. I started working on it yesterday morning. I worked on about 12 hours, and it's still processing. But I took a look at the information. I revisited everything as we'd recorded it, and it looks fabulous.
How is the audio? Can you hear everything in there okay?
Oh, the audio is incredible. I ran the audio straight from your lapel mic into the camera, but when I got it here, I threw it into part of the studio suite that we have for processing both video, audio, and so forth. And I of course, use a bit of compression and stereo imaging so that it has a nice wide sound. It sounds really good. Very clear.
All right, now, you and your wife, Kathy, are the only two people to see this seminar in person. Do you think this video accurately conveys what you got in person?
Well, I would say that it accurately conveys it. The only difference is, as we were there, of course, I was manning the phones and doing my technical end, and Kathy was doing her technical end. I was monitoring audio, she's monitoring video. The only thing that's missing, really, are people standing up and cheering at some of the things you were saying, because it was so absolutely fantastic. I've been involved in all kinds of ancient research and the paranormal for my entire life. And my gosh, you hit on some things that were just mind-blowing. It put a lot of pieces together for me. So that's all it's missing, is people standing up and going, wow!
Or throwing eggs.
Well, you can always make an omelet.
You can always make an omelet, that's true. Jerry, you're going to take this video when you're finished with the editing and production work, post-production work, and you're going to turn it into a DVD. Now, we talked about whether this is going on one or two DVDs. Have you decided yet whether you're going with two DVDs or a double-layered single DVD?
Well, right now we're looking at just the single layer, having two different DVDs. Once we get past the point of production for actually producing this, then I'll take a look at what the the entirety is for the amount of time and what the potentials are for putting it on just one large, not large, but you know, a dense DVD. Mm-hmm. If we were to put it on a Blu-ray DVD, for example, there'd be more than enough room for everything. But we're not going Blu-ray with it at this point. But for sure, you know, we're going to have two DVDs at this point. That may change.
All right. All right, now let's just talk about the seminar itself for a moment, because, as I said, you're the only two people who actually were experienced it in person. What do you think, and look, here, I want you to be brutally honest. Do you think that this seminar was oversold when we were talking about what we were going to cover, and you know, I was saying your boat is about to rock? Did we oversell it, or did we hit the mark?
Well, you know, anytime someone hears something like, you know, your boat's about to rock and so forth, they may take that as just being some hype. But, no, I think that it was understated, to tell you the truth, after having heard the information. You know, there were elements to what you had conveyed that were so glaringly obvious for anyone who would have taken the time to have looked into it as deep as you did. What really made the difference was not just, you know, how you personally explained it, and you're a very good narrator, of course. You explain things very thoroughly. But then you threw in bits and pieces that had to do with ancient language and translations and so forth. And, of course, you're very good at that. That's part of your background. And, gosh, you know, when you did that, it was at times, you know, well, you probably saw me sitting there. I'd sit right up in my chair and I'd go, holy mackerel. But I couldn't say anything because we're recording.
Well, you know, we had people around the world that were tuned in and watching. And I told everyone that last night that I said, look, you've heard of Murphy's Law? Well, Murphy moved in. I mean, right up until time for us to start, we had equipment not cooperating. And it had been working. Yeah. It had been cooperating. And so we were about 10 or 15 minutes late getting started because of that. But then, you know, after that, it pretty much came off without a hitch. Was there anything in this seminar, from your point of view, that was something you had not heard before?
Yeah, quite a bit, actually. There are things that I had supposed on my own. But to actually have you point these things out gave a great deal of gravity to the thoughts that I had had and the concepts that I'd been playing with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe someone somewhere said these things before. Obviously they have, because it's right there in Genesis, if anyone's ever paid any attention. But the way that you wove this together was quite incredible.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm really looking forward to getting to see this DVD, and I think there will be a lot of folks who also would like to see the DVD, and so it's not going to be too much longer, is it? I mean, I'm not trying to rush you. I'm just trying to get a sense of how long for the audience.
Well, to give you some idea, right now, the 45-minute segment that I'm working on, It still has 8 hours to process before I can throw it into the DVD studio program. I still have a 2-hour segment that I haven't even started on yet that has to be processed. See, what happens is that when you're making these things, first you go through the editing, and you go through and you get the sound just right, you get the picture just right and all this, and you color correct and so forth. And then from there, you go to the sound, and you get the sound to where it's uniform, it sounds good, and it's a very listenable product. And then you finish up, and you send it off into something called compressor, which I'm using an Apple Macintosh and Final Cut Studio 2. And once you throw it into compressor, then from that point, it takes as long as it takes. It compresses it down to a format that you can then take into DVD Studio, and then it crunches it, and it will then write a DVD. The whole process, start to finish, is about a week.
Mm-hmm. So maybe, perhaps, sometime next week.
Yeah, I think so, if everything goes as planned. This will be finished sometime in the middle of the night, and I'll probably be getting up at 2 or 3 in the morning and starting the second one. And then it'll run for a couple of days. So, you know, could be by end of this week that I actually have the master ready.
Yeah, but it would, at the very earliest, it would be next week before we would be able to offer it to anyone else who wanted it, because we would have to produce some of these DVDs.
Well, there's more to it than just burning the DVD, because the next stage after that is to create the art, mm-hmm. and the insert and so forth, and that's going to be another few days to do that. So after the first of the week in that regard, yeah, probably so. If a person just wanted just a couple of DVDs stuffed into a little envelope, then sure, we could probably do that right away, you know, sooner. But I think folks that get this really deserve to have it in a really nice package so that they have something that's a real keepsake.
Well, I know you encouraged me to do this seminar again, but I'll tell you something, Jerry. Tearing the studio down, moving the equipment across to the other side of the studio, setting it back up, then getting everything working again, then tearing it down at the end of the seminar and move it all back, and in between there do 3 hours of talking. I don't know that I could do that again.
Well, yeah, you know, I agree with you. It's quite a thing. You really had moved things around. I think if you were to do this again, you should do it, out somewhere else.
Well, that had been my plan, but when we started trying to get folks to register to come to the event in person, we didn't get near the response that we got from trying to get folks to, you know, attend online. And so, you know, maybe we can. We'll see. I don't think I'm going to tear the studio down again, though. If I have to do that, I think that's the last seminar. That's just...
You know, as far as if you do the seminar again, we have a complete broadcast station that we carry with us, as you know, and we can just set things up and broadcast right from anywhere.
Okay, look, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Stargate down south here in Arizona. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. And, Jerry, you know, the last time you were here, we talked about the your expedition down to this portal. I don't know if it's a time portal or a Stargate or what it is, but this anomaly that's supposed to be down in the southern part of Arizona. And this is not new information. This information has been showing up even in newspapers here in Arizona way back into the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, now, you when you were here last time, you and your wife and Mark Felder and Jeff Vance were here. Did I miss anyone? That's everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All of you were here. All of you had been to the site, or actually near the site. You camped in an area with the intention of hiking up to the mesa where this archway is supposed to be the next day, I think. And basically, you were blown away by a very anomalous wind that blew at hurricane force for hours.
Yeah, it was a very strange event. We had at least 70 mile an hour, maybe stronger winds, gusting, and it went on for, like you say, for hours. I think we measured about seven and a half hours before we left.
And this didn't happen anywhere else. Now, I usually say it amazes me. I'm not amazed, but I raise an eyebrow and wonder, did people listen with, you know, one ear plugged up? Because I get email from folks who say they listen to the show, and then their email is about something that was covered on the show, and they're saying, that's not correct, we didn't cover it, here's the real information. And let me give you an example. I got, I think it was four or five emails from people who said they went and checked the Weather Service website and checked the weather for the date and times that you were there, and the Weather Service was out of Tucson, and so they checked that, and it doesn't show any high winds. Well, you said that you said that it was only in that very narrow band, that very narrow area, and when you got a half a mile away, there was no wind.
It was quiet, actually. It's quite uncanny. Yeah, when we got back, we checked with the Border Patrol, who have weather stations all along the border, as well as the Weather Service in Tucson. And Michael, who was part of the expeditionary team, he did his own research, because he's a pilot. So he did his own research. Nowhere was there anything like this recorded. The strongest wind gusts that we came across were in Aravaca, which is about 12 miles away, and they were apparently 20 to 30 mile an hour, you know, gusting up to 20 to 30 miles an hour, but nothing like what we experienced. It was so strong, it took our tent with us in it and blew it over.
With you in it.
Lifted Kathy off the ground and slammed her down. It was unbelievable.
All right, but now, you've been back there, I think, one or two times since then.
Just once.
Once? And with the purpose, I think, of getting actually up on the mesa or the plateau where this archway is supposed to be. Did you make it to that plateau?
We did. In order to get there, it required quite a bit of climbing. The information that we had was not as accurate as you would hope it would be, or maybe we just didn't understand it as well as we could have. But we walked back about a couple miles, and we thought we saw something that looked like it might be the right type of topography. We climbed up to this low mountain and took a look, and it wasn't it. Searched the entire area of the mountain. Then we climbed up to an even higher mountain to get a better look, and we could see it obviously wasn't anywhere from that part of the mountain back the way we'd come. So we went down and climbed onto another mountain, even higher, and then we could see down into the entire surrounding area. At that point, we saw the landmarks that we were looking for, and we made our way over there. We just kept going. And at the end of about 8 hours of hiking, we were quite worn out and running out of water, and so we came back.
Okay, but now you got to the plateau. Did you get up on the plateau itself?
Yeah. Yeah, we did.
And did you see the archway?
No, we didn't.
Now, how big is this plateau?
I'm sorry?
How big is the plateau?
Well, I don't know. I would say it's probably at least a half a mile long, a quarter mile wide. It's strewn with boulders. The entire place is like one big crystal outcropping.
What do you mean crystal outcropping?
Well,
I mean, it's got crystals coming up out of the ground?
Well, not like you'd think of like great big crystals, but I mean there's huge chunks of quartz everywhere.
Well, quartz is very often associated with places that exhibit high energy. I've had a number of guests on the show that talk about the energy properties of quartz. And as a matter of fact, old radios, you can still make these, AM radios that do not use batteries, but use a quartz crystal, and you have a little earpiece and listen, and you can listen to radio that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why do you think you didn't find the archway? Is it not there?
No, it's not that. We had climbed up and down several mountains. It was a very sunny day, of course, and it was kind of warm. We had not really anticipated having gone as far as we did. It's, you know, my idea more than Kathy's. Once we got on top of that last mountain and saw it, it's like, there are the features. We've got to go there. Well, we went, and by the time we got there, we were so tired that it was really hard to do anything but just sit. The sun had really washed us out, and we had not brought anything with us to eat. And the 2 quarts of water that we brought were about 2 quarts shy of what we needed. So at that point, and then it was getting later in the day, we made a decision that it was best if we headed back. So we knew now that this was the place, this is the area, and it made a lot more sense to go back with the research team and just comb the entire area with the team instead of trying to do all that ourselves, because it is a large area and there's a lot of up and down there.
Do you think that when you go back, you're going to be able to find this place?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, we've got pictures. We have all the details we need now. We know right where to go.
All right, now, when you take an expeditionary team back down there, are you going to camp in the same place you did before, or will you be camping closer to this location?
I think we'll be camping closer to the location. And the reason is, well, of course, obviously, that windstorm, although that's a really good place to camp. But I think because if we're right there at the trailhead camped out, then we can make our way back the several miles, and when we come back out, it's not a question of making it back, then getting in the truck, and then driving back to the campsite. What we're planning on doing is dropping water along the way and food along the way so that when we come back, we won't have to carry all that, but it'll be there waiting for us.
All right, now, from where you have to leave your vehicles to where you have to arrive to camp, how long of a hike is that?
Oh, I would say it's probably 2 hours.
And is it pretty rugged terrain?
It's rugged terrain, exactly. Of course, we're walking down a wash, but the wash has, it isn't just flat. It has like narrowing canyons. You have to climb up and over these things. It's not a simple walk.
All right, now, why do you think, well, we have a break taking over. I'll get into that when we come back from the break. All right, folks, Jerry Wills and I, myself, moi, will continue right after this break. We'll be right back. don't forget, all week this week, if you become a member, you join our members area, and you sign up on an annual basis, you get a free official Kevin Smith Show mug. Mine is a coffee mug. You can drink whatever you wish out of it, but the Kevin Smith Show mug. And as I say, now's the time to do that. These are going to go away. They're not going to be available. The design is going to change. But we'd like to send you one to say thank you. My guest is Jerry Wills. And Jerry, what I was going to ask you when we went away for break is this place, it's a Stargate or a time portal. It's some kind of a strange anomaly. Why do you think it's out there in the middle of freaking nowhere?
Well, it's really hard to say. The middle of nowhere for us right now may have been something that was quite popular thousands of years ago. But I believe, more importantly, this place is, or not more importantly, but more likely, this place is something that's a naturally occurring phenomena. It happens to be the place where perhaps ley lines meet, and it's composed. Well, there's so much quartz there; it's really very beautiful. So these are essential elements, I suppose, for something of this nature to occur. I couldn't say for sure, but it's definitely an anomalous place.
All right. Now, the doorway in Peru that you've talked with us about and we've seen in your videos, someone made that. That's not a naturally occurring doorway. I mean, somebody carved that out. It seems obvious visually,
right,
that somebody carved that out. This archway that you're looking for, you don't think somebody carved this out?
Well, I don't think so. The pictures I've seen, it looks quite natural, like any natural arch would appear. But, you know, that could be deceiving as well. You know, one of the strange things about this place is that there was a small arch, and that's where all the anomalous things occurred, where people saw, for example, sitting there, they look through and they would see Spanish conquistadors riding by, or, you know, other scenes that were taking place, which you only saw if you looked through the archway. If you went around and looked the other side, you wouldn't see this at all. Maybe it was made to look that way. I mean, I really don't know. But the strange thing is, that particular arch doesn't exist now. But since the time that the original arch collapsed, and they went back, the fellow who gave us the information, there is now a much larger arch in its place, and the picture that I have, I haven't shown you this yet, but I will. I'll scan it in and email it to you. This arch is much larger, and it looks like a snake that's going along the ground. It goes then up at a right angle, and then curves over, and it looks like the snake's head is resting on a pillar. Now, it's not a well-carved, well-detailed-looking thing, but that's the characterization you get when you look at it. And this arch wasn't there when the first arch was there. This is something that's just happened.
Now, the original report that showed up in the Tucson newspaper. I believe it was the Tucson newspaper, wasn't it?
Yes.
The original report was back in, when, the 1920s?
No, I think it was in the 50s.
1950s.
Mm-hmm.
The man or the men who discovered it at that time, are they still alive?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of them has, and he's the one who's been helping us.
Mm-hmm. And did he, now you talked about this before, but just remind us, did he see anything anomalous about this arch?
Oh, quite a bit. He told us several stories about this arch that, you know, it just baffled him. He's always been interested in unusual phenomena anyway. And some of the things he told us about his experiences, things he never told anyone else, just absolutely baffled him. One of the occasions, he was going up the side of this this steep hill, and about halfway up, and it is steep, Kathy and I came down, and it's really steep, and it's just strewn with quartz boulders. Anyway, he was sitting there catching his breath, and he blinked, and he felt disoriented, and he looked around, and he couldn't figure out where he was because things weren't in the right place. And upon investigation, he discovered that he was instantly transported from one hillside all the way across the valley to the other hillside. And that's why, on one hand, as he was sitting there, the ravine would have been off to his right. And when he blinked his eyes and looked around, the ravine was now off to his left. And he couldn't figure out how he got there, so he got kind of freaked out, went jogging back to his truck several miles away, hoping that his truck was still there and he didn't get caught up in some different time stream. And that's him talking. That's what he had to say.
And this is the guy whose photograph appeared with that story in the newspaper, right?
Yeah, he's one of the men that's in that photograph.
Now, these guys that in modern times, we would say they are the ones who sort of discovered it. In modern times, they're not the first. I mean, there are stories about this place among the Native Americans as well, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, that's kind of where the story started from. There were some Native American boys who were playing on this plateau. One of them was jumping back and forth, you know, over rocks and jumped into this, went through this portal, this, you know, this archway of stone. And he just vanished. Well, the other kids were pretty flipped out by that. And they went back and got the elders of the tribe, came back. They couldn't find the boy at all. One of the women had a chicken with her, so they threw rocks through this, and of course rocks just went through, and landed on the other side. Well, the Native American woman, the grandmother of sorts, she tossed the chicken through, and it vanished. The rest of the story, however, takes place, I mean, that took place in the late 1800s. The rest of the story takes place in the late 1920s when a ranch hand was riding around, because they have cattle roaming freely out there. He was checking the cattle, and he came upon the remains of what he thought looked to be a young man dressed in moccasins. The bones were slightly scattered, but they didn't look like they had been there for, well, 30, 40 years. It looked like they had been there for maybe 5 or 6 years. And so he gave it a proper burial and went on his way. This leads you to believe that perhaps the bones he found, because there were no other bones he found of a Native American, that perhaps this was the boy who jumped through, got lost, didn't know what was happening, and it's a really dry place. It's hard to find any drinkable water, so he may have just expired. I mean, no one really knows what happened.
What do you expect to find, Jerry?
Well, at the very least, we are expecting to find the archway. Once we've established that, then we're going to start doing a series of experiments. We're going to use the tones that we use down in South America to see if it's sound activated. Perhaps it is. If we also have all kinds of measuring equipment to check it out to see if there's any anomalous fields that are being generated. And if it does actually turn on, so to speak, and you know, something very unusual happens, then there are a couple members of our team who are ready to walk through it.
And has anyone ever walked through it and come back?
Well, now, according to what we've been told, there have been animals thrown through it that vanished, and this one Indian boy, but no one else has ever gone through it. Everyone's been very afraid of it. So if we can get it to activate, then we've got at least one, maybe two of our research team that are going to go through it, and they have all kinds of documentation equipment with them, and they're going to document what's on the other side and hopefully get them back, because we'll have a rope tied to them, if that helps.
All right, now, you know my background. You know that I'm an ex-cop.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I know that whenever you do one of these experiments with anomalies like this, you have everyone that's going to try an experiment, you have them on video say who they are and that they are of sound mind and body and that they're making this decision on their own, and they realize that there are risks involved, and they hold you harmless.
Mm-hmm.
And one of your team members walks through that archway and doesn't come back. While that video may ultimately free you from prosecution, you do realize there's going to be a very serious investigation of all of this.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, you know what happened with Travis Walton. He was abducted by extraterrestrials in front of guys. They couldn't find his body, so therefore they accused them of murder. But what we plan to do is to have a camera rolling so that there is no doubt what happened, so we have that evidence documented.
Why do you suspect the camera is going to be able to work there if it won't work at the doorway in South America?
Well, because we'll have sunlight. We'll have daylight. And, mm-hmm. you know, in South America what was happening, the cameras were working, obviously, because if you watch the video, you can see it was working. It's just that it was so dark that we couldn't pick up any images. We couldn't record what happened.
Mm-hmm.
The cameras weren't sensitive for the dark. With this, we'll have enough light to where we can actually, you know, see it. It'll be broad daylight.
Now, with all the stories and myths about this place, do they say that it is active at any particular time of the year more than others, or at any particular time of the day more than at other times?
Well, there isn't really any data on that. For the most part, people have been afraid to go there. And there, as a result, isn't any anecdotal data at all about this.
All right. I'll tell you what I'd like for us to do. I want to open up the telephone lines so that people can call us. And as I do, let me get our telephone number up on the screen for those who are watching on our internet television channel. And the telephone number, for those of you who are not watching us and you're listening via radio, 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580 is the number to call. Now, if that's going to cost you long-distance money, you can use our toll-free number, which is also on the screen. It is 1-888-223-4599. 1-888-223-4599. And we'd love to hear from you. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Okay. That caller didn't make it. Let's try this. You know, this may be one of those anomalies that's residual from having moved the equipment. And if it is, we'll take a few minutes in the next break and see if we can fix it. But we're going to try and answer the telephone. Believe me, folks, we are trying to answer the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Yeah, that's not nice. That isn't working. Okay, so we have we will just have to wait and do this in the next break. All right, so we'll do that in the next break. And I apologize. It's one of those things. It's kind of like those cameras, Jerry. You know, the cameras were working until we got ready to go live in the seminar.
And then they just, nothing worked.
Yeah. And so, and for those of you who are calling in, let me urge you to stop for right now. There's no way I can bring you on the air right now. I will announce it in a minute, and we'll, you know, that we've got it fixed. But at the moment, it isn't doing what it's supposed to do. You cannot believe this, Jerry. You just can't believe it. It is, the telephone line is lighting up. It's just one call after another, after another, after another, and we can't get to it. I'm sitting here watching the monitor. We've had, since I've been talking about the telephone, we've had over 20 calls already.
Wow.
And so I want us to get to it, and we are going to get to it. Probably 10 of those 20 is one particular number where they're just hitting redial, redial, redial. Well, it's hit it till you have calluses on your fingers. You can't get through because of the fact that our system will not put you on the air. And we'll fix that in just a moment. Okay, now, Jerry, we'll do that during the next break. Jerry, the doorway in South America, that doorway, you suspect was built by extraterrestrials, or do you think it was built by this king from Lemuria that is alleged to have come to that area?
Well, you know, it's really unclear who made it. After your seminar, I'm inclined to believe that perhaps God himself built it.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Or one of the elves.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, one of the Elohim?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, whoever it was that made this had access to very high technology and had a very good sense of the details of creating such a thing as this.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's why these doorways exist, you know, in different places here on Earth, is because this is how these quote-unquote gods would move from place to place to place. And the people who were privileged, the rulers or whomever, they would have access to the gods, of course, and they would also know about these places. But that's just speculation on my part. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was built by someone, and it does work.
All right. There's never been any claim that the one in Arizona was built by anyone, has there? I mean, nobody's claimed that, not even the Native Americans.
Well, no, there isn't anything like that that we're aware of. You know, the thing that's fascinating to me is that this is within about a mile. If Kathy and I had gone another mile and a half or so, we would have been into a canyon called Hell Gate, which is a large canyon that opens up to this quartz plateau. And Hell's Gate was named by the Spanish. Why they named it that is anybody's guess, because it isn't like hell back there. And there are some very strange petroglyphs that are back there as well.
Like what? What kind of petroglyphs?
Well, I haven't seen them. Mm-hmm. We've only been told that there's strange petroglyphs. And people that live down there know the difference between strange and typical, so I presume that it must be something unusual.
Mm-hmm.
But to call it Hell Gate would suggest to me that something that Spanish had run into would leave them thinking that they had accessed something terrible. For example, maybe Moses with horns or something, who knows?
Well, that's now for folks that went to the seminar, they're not surprised by that statement.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you, were you surprised when I showed you Michelangelo's statue of Moses?
You know, I had seen that picture years ago, and I wondered, what in the world is that about? When I heard your explanation, I just, it took my breath away. It was really quite astonishing because it answered a lot of questions for me.
Yeah. Well, I think we tend, all of us, to get things sort of pictured in our mind, and we think that's the way it is. And not just about Michelangelo's Statue of Moses, but everything. You know, we sort of picture things in our minds, and we think that we have it figured out, and that's the way it is. And then you run up against one of these portals or a doorway, a time portal, and it doesn't fit any of the models of modern life as we know it. And it really doesn't fit any of the definitions of technology as we know it, and yet with technology we cannot duplicate it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And I think that I think it's accurate to call it ancient technology. If someone built it and it has these properties, these abilities, then, you know, it is what it is. And there's, if it transports people from point A to point B and it was built, then it is technology in some way.
Oh, yeah, well, it's absolutely technology. The thing that's interesting to me is how, if you were to see a piece of technology, let's say from the future, that you had no concept of what it was or how it worked, except you saw that it did something unusual, that would be a big mystery to you. You wouldn't know how to put it into words, and it would certainly baffle you as to how to explain it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're dealing with in this particular regard. This was such high technology back then, and it's such high technology now, but we don't have a reference point for it.
But you know something? This may not be ancient technology, as I called it. This may actually be technology from the future that has come back to us.
Well, you know, if this time portal is what we think it is, that kind of gives you the idea that the past, the present, and the future are intrinsically linked, and you can move between them. Much like Michio Kaku was suggesting when he was on your show.
You know, we have this break coming up, and I want to announce again, during the break, folks, I'm going to try and get your telephone line fixed so that you can call us, okay? I know you were calling in. It was coming in, but for some reason, we couldn't bring it up on the broadcast board, on the mixer board. So we'll try to get that fixed for you. I know you want to talk with Jerry, and he wants to talk with you, so we'll try. You said something, Jerry?
I was just saying, check to make sure it's plugged in. We were messing with those AC lines.
Yeah, it is. It is. In fact, you're on the system, the same system. It's just that line two on that system doesn't want to come on the air. So, and we don't know why. So we'll see. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills. Jerry, are you still with me?
I'm still here.
All right. Well, I did discover that we had a one line plugged into the wrong jack on the back, so of the digital hybrid. So maybe things will work now, and we're going to take a run at it anyway, and hope folks can give us a call. The telephone number is appearing on your screen as I speak. And for those of you who are listening via your computer or radio, the telephone number is 602-539-9580 or the toll-free number at 888-223-4599. All of you who were so excited a few minutes ago and wanted to talk with Jerry, I apologize for the problem. But it's fixed, and if you wish to talk with Jerry, this is the time to call, okay? We sincerely hope this works. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
It's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, am I coming in loud and clear?
Yep, you're loud and clear and on the air.
Hello there, Jerry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little cramming for tests and whatnot in radio broadcasting school. You know, I'm going to say it again. I would love to join you on one of your expeditions one of these days. I am taking, with radio broadcasting to learn how to work journalism. I would love to be a journalist and join you in some of your expeditions if one day I could afford it. But I do have to ask you, with a lot of these ancient portals and whatnot, do you think the Anunnaki may have had something to do with it, or do you think this may be actually used by somebody totally different?
Well, you know, that's a really big mystery, and we're trying to figure that out. We believe the Anunnaki probably had something to do with it because they seem to have pretty high technology. a lot of the technology, maybe all the technology that was available to the ancients came from somewhere else, and after Kevin's seminar, I'm really inclined to believe that it all came from the stars.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of my theories from what I've looked at, according with your research, that the ancient tunnel system, I think, were used by the Anunnaki. But when it comes to the portal, I think that may be somebody totally different, something we may not yet understand. Perhaps even the Greys. I wouldn't put it past them to put that there, or even the Transcendentals.
Well, it could be. You know, there are a lot of reports of the Greys down in that area. There's a little ghost town called Ruby that's nearby. It's several miles from where this portal is. And there have been UFOs and Greys seen between where we're camped at and this ghost town on numerous occasions. And that's one of the reasons why we believe the Spanish called it Hell's Gate, because these look like little demons to them.
And if craft were seen in that area, what was the general shape of the craft that were seen there? Was there different shapes, or were they usually as saucers?
Well, you know, we don't really have any anecdotal data on what the shapes were. We just know that they said they've seen strange flying machines. The night that Kathy and I camped out there by ourselves, we saw an incredibly bright light that came down and moved across the mountains very slowly. And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And then, of course, just went on across and over a mountain. We didn't see it any longer. But, you know, there are a lot of UFO sightings down in that area, and we don't know what they are or where they come from. But one of the things that we're supposing is that if this is some sort of a portal, maybe that archway is the focal point of the portal, but perhaps the focal point shifts and moves either to a different location on this plateau or even above this plateau.
All right, Kevin, thanks for the call.
In the 1800s, there was a pterodactyl that was shot down by some ranchers because it was stealing cattle. And how did that get there?
Good question. All right, let's go back to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. It's Terry from Ohio.
Hi, Terry.
I'd like to start out and thank Jerry. He's a gentleman and a scholar for helping you out, and I hope he works with you on your new book that's coming out, and we can get a seminar on that. I'd look forward to it. I was wondering, as going back to, like Jerry said, that these gates, you know, were made for the Elohim. And like and when El came on the process, we ate the fruit and became Elohim. And also like the Tower of Babel, when we tried to attempt our own fate to get to godhood ourselves, that was struck down. that also going through these gates would be also taking our life in peril, that we, that by going through them we may activate the 200 and some geno and 90% of our brain and become, you know, Elohim, where I believe that we're being kind of quarantined right now.
So let me make sure I understand what you're saying. That going through one of these portals may be something very similar to building the Tower of Babel. In other words, we may be putting our own lives in peril because we're doing something maybe we aren't supposed to do. Is that pretty much what you're saying?
Yeah, just another, you know, like eating the forbidden fruit and, you know, man finding his own way to the gods, and, you know, and that's not permitted at this time. That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Okay. Terry, thanks for the call. What do you think about that, Jerry?
Well, you know, there could be some element of danger to it, but that's what adventure is. Adventure contains an element of danger, otherwise it wouldn't be an adventure. And if there is something to be gained by doing this, then we want to be able to document that as best we can so we can bring it back and share it with everyone. I have high hopes that we can evolve as a species into what we're supposed to be and not remain as we are. It's the only chance, I think, that we have to escape the aspect of it being a prison planet and returning it back to being a garden where we are like the gods walking within that garden.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Rex from Miami.
Hi, Rex.
I wanted to ask Jerry, now, is the gateway freestanding, where you can, like, walk around back behind it? Because you had mentioned that rocks could go through, but the chicken disappeared.
Yeah, that's correct. It's something that the original one was perched kind of precariously on the edge of a ravine. And the one that I've seen pictures of, I don't have enough information to say whether you could walk behind it, although I'm sure you could. I just don't know what the terrain would be like on the other side. But it definitely is, you know, it's an object you can walk around like a rock, you know.
Okay. Yeah, so it's a lot different than the one from Peru where it's the side of that rock outcropping.
Yeah.
And there's only one way through it, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is something that you can walk around, touch, put your arms around if it reach, and so forth. It's not like the one in Peru. It's not a cliff face with a doorway carved into it.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
All right, Rex, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. And let me invite all the rest of you to grab your telephone. The telephone number is 602-539-9580. Or if that will cost you long-distance tolls to call, you can give us a call on our toll-free number. And the toll-free number is 1-888-223-4599. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington. How are we doing?
Doing fine. Thank you, Ryan.
How are you doing today?
Hi, Ryan.
Well, Jerry, I was thinking if you do go through and you do end up in another dimension or another time, would it be possible to do a live video broadcast on the other side so that we could have the first broadcast in a different time dimension?
Well,
I
don't know.
I was kind of being humorous with that.
I know, but, you know, the thought has occurred to us, because if we could actually figure this out, we might be able to run a long cable through and put a camera on the other side. I mean, at this point, anything's possible.
Well, one other question I had for you is, do you believe in reincarnation and life after death? Do you believe that when we pass away due to natural circumstances, or hopefully none of us do, but if that happens, that eventually we will finally know what life is all about. It seems so hard these days to really get it. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I believe in life after death. I fell out of an airplane hangar in 1981. And you know how tall an airplane hangar is. And, I died. I was gone. I was out of my body looking at myself. So I have a pretty keen understanding, at least to the degree that I experienced it, that there's more to life than just for living. And moving to the next realm of existence and then coming back here again, I believe that's possible. That would explain, at least to my satisfaction, a lot of the experiences that I've had and a lot of the experiences a lot of other folks have had as well. Life after death has been documented pretty thoroughly.
I think a person's cosmic view, we hear a lot of people talk about world view, but I think a person's cosmic view plays a tremendous part and has a tremendous impact on their view of death, and death is really a part of this world view. But your cosmic view has a big impact on it. If we are more than biology, if we are, I've heard people say, maybe even you, Jerry, I've heard people say that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience.
Yeah, I believe that.
Okay, now if that's true, then death isn't. It's just, it's like when I leave the studio and I walk out that door, I close the door behind me, I'm no longer in the studio, I am outside. I'm in another place, but it's still me. And
that's what my experience was when I was floating up, looking at myself lying there. It was still me. I was just having a different experience.
And, it's not, I don't think it's traumatic for the person who's going through it.
No, I don't remember any pain associated with it at all. The only thing that I remember about that experience that brought any sense of remorse was having looked back upon my life and thinking that I could have done so much more to be kind to others, to do things to promote betterment in the world.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we'll take one or two more calls, and we'll be on Final Approach, and probably have time for one call. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Jerry, before I don't know if we will, in fact, have time to take any more calls, but because I've got a couple of flash messages from around the world that I want us to get to.
All right.
The first one here is from Bjarne in Norway, and he asks, does Jerry know what the Akashic Records are? And can you use that to obtain knowledge about the future?
Well, I know what the Akashic Records are, according to Edgar Cayce and other people that I've spoken to, and apparently you can. I don't know that I've met anyone who is that proficient at accessing those records in order to bring the information forward. At some point, it seems to become clouded with the personal coloration of whomever is providing the information. Sometimes seems a bit subjective to me.
Is it accurate to say that the Akashic Records is another term, it's different terminology, to describe sort of universal or cosmic consciousness, or is that something different?
I think it's different. I believe the Akashic Record is more details about everything, and details that are quite telling.
So it's kind of like the cosmic filing cabinet.
Yes, exactly, in a spiritual sense.
All right. Now, this other message that I've gotten is from Bob in Australia, and it really doesn't have anything to do with you or the topic tonight, but I am going to answer it. He asked, have you heard anything about Dick Criswell? Yes, Dick Criswell is recovering. He is doing much, much better. He is not home from the hospital, but he's doing much better. They say that he is able to stand about 5 minutes, I think it is, and take a few steps. And I'll tell you, he's got a long way to go. But we very nearly lost Dick Criswell. But he is recovering. And thank you for asking. I know he'll appreciate that. And all of you folks listening to the show, don't forget Dick Criswell in your prayers and in all your best thoughts. And send some healing energy his way. He's a trooper. He's a good guy. All right, Jerry, let me look at the clock here. Yeah, we've got a few minutes. And in a way, this sort of goes back into the seminar that we just did. I'll just start there and then ask the question. I think it's clear from the seminar and from what we covered in the seminar that there's not anything that we have talked about here tonight that's outside the realm of possibility. There are a great many things that we've talked about that are still in the realm of speculation. And that's what you do, is you go out and explore and try to verify as much of these stories as you can possibly verify.
Sure.
It is the nature of things that sometimes you verify that a story maybe was a little exaggerated.
Right, and that's what we're trying to, you know, get to with this. Just because we don't find anything doesn't invalidate the story either, but we try to be as fair as possible and bring the information forward with as much detail so that people can make up their mind about that sort of thing.
All right, now, would you say that the doorway in Peru you verified is true?
I would say that we have validated this to a point that we can. We have more people than just myself. Mark is online right now listening. I think Jeff is online as well. Hello to both of them. And I know that with their experience, my experience, and the experience of others who are with us as well, we've validated this experience about as far as we can without taking a camera in and videotaping past that point, which we're going to try to do at some future date.
All right. Now, the one in South Arizona,
mm-hmm.
You verified the places there, but at this point you have not been able to actually get a glimpse of the archway itself. When do you plan to go back and try again? How long is it going to be before you go back and try to get to this archway?
Well, the only mitigating factor would be if the weather gets warmer, and that would make it very difficult to navigate in such high heat as we have here in Arizona. That in mind, we're hoping that we can get back down there within the next couple weeks or so. I need to check with Mark, with Jeff, and with the other members of the team to see what their schedules will accommodate. And once we have that in hand, then I'll let you know.
Yeah, if it gets much warmer, you know, we're going to have, you're going to have a huge problem with rattlesnakes.
Yeah, that's true.
And we do have our share of rattlesnakes out in these deserts. Actually, right up in Phoenix, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you something. There was a huge cosmic mistake took place when me and snakes wound up on the same planet. That was the largest cosmic mistake that's ever happened, because I don't like snakes except to eat them. Rattlesnake is pretty good steak, and so is python. But I don't want to be anywhere near a live snake. And when you head off into this area that you're going into, I've looked at it on the map. You are definitely in their home territory.
Well, you know, one of the things that I was taught by a Hopi medicine man was how to walk through a snake-infested territory safely. Now, I've only tried it a couple of times. This was up north of Phoenix, up into the mid-desert. But I was standing in a place that had several rattlesnakes, and I used the technique he taught me, and I calmed the snakes down and walked right on through without any incident. That doesn't mean that I would have as much faith the next time. It's a very unnerving thing. You walk upon a rattlesnake, and you're close, and it's rattling, and, you know, it's just kind of a freaky thing. You get a little bit of fear going there.
Oh, no, not at all.
Your mind about you.
Not at all. It's not a little bit of fear. It's train loads of fear for me. I'm telling you, snakes and me are on the... It's wrong that we're on the same planet. But it happened, and, you know, we'll have to deal with it. Jerry, I want to thank you for being with us this evening. As always, it's been fascinating. Folks, I do apologize for the little bit of a problem we had with the telephone line. We got that fixed. And I want to thank all of you who called. I want to thank all of you who joined tonight as members. And let me remind you that if you do join as a member of the Kevin Smith Show members area on our website, you get an annual membership, you will receive one of these mugs, Kevin Smith Show mug, free of charge. And look, I got to tell you, you know, I'm looking at this and up close and personal, and I can't think of a better mug for you to have. But we'll send it to you to say thanks. Sorry?
We have a special video we're going to send over to you, Kevin. It's a video taken at the Temple of Time and Space.
Okay.
I picked up a nice rock that's right from the edifice of the Time and Space Temple. Anyway, your viewers can watch for that video in the next few days. I'll get it sent over to you. I found it here, and it's the next one in the series of things we made for you.
Outstanding. Thank you. Stay on the line with me. That's it, folks. That's a wrap. I wish we had more time, but we don't. But we will be back tomorrow. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.